On this episode of the Ottawa Windbags, we chat with Raiders beat writer Adam Hill. Had a great interview with him. He had plenty of insight on John Gruden, what's going on in the locker room, and told an awesome story of how he got beat up in the black hole when he was 22. We also figured out how to get Henry Ruggs more touches. We pulled an old Jerry Porter interview, and we looked ahead to the final game of the season against the Broncos. This episode is brought to you by our friends at Nirvana CBD. Go to nirvanacbd.com. Use promo code AW20 for 20% off. Nirvana CBD, find your state of natural relaxation. If you like the podcast, we hope you'll subscribe, comment, rate, tell your friends, all those wonderful things to spread the word for the Ottawa Windbags. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
Narrated!
Caught! Touchdown!
You're listening to the Ottawa Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford, Juan Soto, Rory Parsons.
Yeah, it is another Ottawa Windbags coming at you.
Yeah.
Big news. I guess not big news, but Gruden actually chimed in on something we've been talking about. I'm talking to you, Rory. I'm always saying,
hey, fuck you, Rory.
Love Ruggs. Ruggs is awesome. But let's not like force feed him the ball when we should be forcing Darren Waller, Josh Jacobs, Hunter Renfrow, things of that nature. And so, lo and behold, I felt so good when he said this week.
Well, Ruggs has been sick for 10 days. He just showed up Friday, number one. So, you know, we didn't even know if he was going to play, Vic. But that had something to do with it. Right now, just so we're all on the same page, we're targeting Waller. Doing a pretty good job of that. We're targeting Nelson Aguilar because those are our top two guys, and we're targeting Josh Jacobs. And Ruggs has got to practice, stay with us longer, and he's got to do more with his targets. And when he does, he'll see the ball more.
He's got to do more with his targets, Rory. I'm
telling you. I don't disagree. Like, I legit don't disagree with him. My problem is it's the lack of opportunities. Yeah, he's got to do more with the opportunities he gets. I get it. But it's the amount of opportunities and it's the quality of opportunities that I'd push back on.
Did he say Nelson Aguilar? Like he's like Mexican?
He was saying he was he drank the same thing that Rory did when he called Hummer Renfrow.
Hummer Renfrows? Oh, before we go any further, I want to say one thing.
Okay.
Fuck you, Rory.
Hey, fuck you, Walk.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Fuck.
Yeah, like that's what you know, as we start looking more towards like the like next season, because obviously you know, this weekend's game with the Broncos, 7-9, 8-8, whatever. We'll talk about that later in the show. But it's like, all right, where can we set ourselves up for next season? Like, what do we need to work on? And again, I keep saying, like, I love Ruggs. Love him. Glad we got him. You know, kind of a down year compared to other rookies that other rookie wide receivers. But it's like every throw you force to Ruggs is a throw you're not giving to Waller or Renfrow or Jacobs or anybody else. That's all I'm saying. Don't force him.
Well, in this game, you know what you have in Renfrow. You know what you have in Waller. There's a lot of things that you can do with a guy with Ruggs' speed that you're not doing. Mm-hmm. That jet sweep, you ran it one time. One time that I can remember in the last fucking, 2 months?
Yeah.
Just get him.
They handed it off. They handed it off one time, but
yeah,
they
handed it off to him. But I mean, when did we give him like a quick, you know, bubble screen or a quick little like, you know what, the guy's playing a little bit off because of his speed. Let's just get him the ball and see what he can do. Maybe he can make a guy miss.
Yeah,
you know, like that's what they started to do with Tyreek Hill. They got him the ball however they could. They lined him up in the backfield. They got him the ball different ways. Figure it out, man. You know what you got with these other guys. You know, surprisingly, you know what you got with Aguilar. I'm going to call him Aguilar from now on. But, like, you know what you got with these guys, right? Play Edwards. Get him some more snaps. He looked good when he gets the ball. He doesn't get any targets. When he gets the ball, he's good. Get these guys the ball. Just like we talked about, you know, what you should do with quarterback. I think they should throw Mariota out there, see what he's got. And same with these other guys. You know, you got Edwards, you got Ruggs, you got all these guys, man. Yeah, treat it like a glorified preseason game. This game does not mean shit. You know, you want to win, of course, but like, hey, man, you got to know what you got. And there's a lot of young players on this team that haven't been getting a lot of run. They get run at the last minute, but they don't get run like leading up to the game where you're going to be in the game plan and we're going to try to get you the ball.
Look at who drafted who in this past draft. So Raiders going into the draft, we wanted a number one wide receiver. That was our number one need. Everyone agreed. Everyone knew it was the number one need. We get the opportunity to draft the first wide receiver taken, which honestly didn't look like it was going to happen. We were sitting at number 12. So you got Judy, you got Lamb, you got Ruggs on the board, you've got Justin Jefferson, you've got, you know, we were talking about Denzel Mims. He got a lot of traction on all kinds of Raider conversations as a potential, you know, wide receiver one. T. Higgins, Chase Claypool in the second round, even LaVisca Chenault. I don't even know how to say his last name. That was going to be the nightmare Raider pick, wasn't it? We were going to reach for LaVisca Chenault from Washington. It was like, thank God that didn't happen. But every single one of those wide receivers went to a team that had a plan on how to fucking use them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The Broncos knew exactly what they were going to do with Judy. The Cowboys knew exactly what they were going to do with Lamb in the slot. Joe Burrow and the Bengals brought in a big wide receiver in T. Higgins because they needed that sort of red zone reliable target. The 49ers with Ayuk. Like all of these teams brought in a wide receiver based on what they were trying to do on offense. The Raiders got pick of the bunch. So you have to assume that we really liked Ruggs more than any other wide receiver. What did we like if it wasn't just pure speed? Because it wasn't just pure speed. Like he had the hands, he had the route running, he had everything that you look for in a wide receiver one with more size, meaning he's taller, he's heavier, and he's got, you know, bigger wingspan, jump size, whatever, than the Antonio Browns and the Tyreek Hills of the world, who were great wide receiver ones. So I really struggle with the fact they had the opportunity to cherry pick Ruggs, and now we don't see them use him at all. We don't design looks for him. We don't give him the ball on the jet sweeps. We're not running bubble screens to him slants. Out wide. Slants, man.
Slants,
we're not running
baby.
Any slants.
You get that guy with a full head of steam on a slant. The one thing that kind of kicks me in the dick with my take there with Gruden saying like, well, you know, for giving it, you know, he's got to earn his catches, earn his targets, you know, because we got to go to Waller. We got all these mouths to feed. And then he goes and gives Jason Witten 17 targets.
It's the same thing, dude.
Like that's an issue. So I dug this interview up with Jerry Porter. Remember Jerry Porter played played on Oakland for the first stint that John Gruden had. He talked to TMZ. I pulled this up. This is a year old interview, and it got me thinking. So he was asked by TMZ, what was it like playing for John Gruden as a rookie?
Hell, we didn't like each other. He doesn't like young guys. That's another reason I say I don't think he's going to. Coach Gruden seems to me as the person who wants to see the resume, what you've done in the NFL. That's why that's why Jordy Nelson was able to come there and fit in. But I don't know, young receivers. Like, I mean, actually, Amari Cooper had a resume too. But like rookies, young guys, he leans on them. It's nothing they've ever seen before. It's tough. And it gets you to a point where I felt like I wanted to fight Gruden once.
So first off, Jerry Porter sounds like really pissed off at Gruden. Like he sounds salty. So I don't know if it's as bad as he's making it sound. There's like a brewing grudge there, but he's definitely not the first guy to say Gruden's got a complicated system. You got to be smart. You got to be experienced to grab it. Maybe it's as simple as that. Maybe it's just Ruggs just being a rookie. Gruden's got a complicated system. You're not at Alabama. You know, you're not at a top college, you know, with the best roster every time you face off against another team. Maybe it's just simple, hopefully, and maybe it's just simple growing pains from a 22-year-old.
I think that's a great interview, dude. I mean, it tells the story, really. It was a really, really great interview. The fact that he doesn't, quote-unquote, like young guys is pretty telling. I think last year, you know, a lot was made of our rookie class and how much production we got out of that, but that might have just been out of necessity, you know. And this year he had the opportunity to bring in a couple of veterans and look what happened with Moreau and Witten, you know. Yeah. It's a good example of it, which, I mean, doesn't bode well for our future because, you know, we built this thing on the basis of having draft picks and being able to, you know, mold this team in his image. So what does it say that he doesn't even like the young guys when we're not seeing him given the opportunities?
Yeah, he's picking his own guys. What the fuck?
Yeah. Gruden grinders, nonetheless.
Son of a bitch.
I don't So, like, okay, on the offensive side, right? On the offensive side of the ball, which of his guys is he really ignoring other than Ruggs? I mean, he found Darren Waller off the scrap heap, right? Turned him into a superstar.
Edwards?
Yeah.
Edwards? Yeah. Edwards is
he's a glorified lineman. Every time he's in the game, they're running the ball.
Yeah.
And he's doing a good job. He's blocking really well out there.
Well, yeah, he's got all that energy from not catching passes.
Yeah, he doesn't have to run routes. Or as Rory says, run roots.
Roots. Rory's roots.
Guilty. Guilty. That should be a segment. But yeah, dude, I mean, I would argue that he doesn't use a lot of the guys in the right way. Like, I hate how he uses Josh Jacobs. I'm super, super, like, to me, when Josh Jacobs catches a ball, does he not maximize the amount of yardage that he could possibly get out of every fucking carry or every catch? Like, give the dude a screen. Give him some blockers. Like, that seems to fit his skill set really well. And we've never, like, correct me if I'm wrong, we haven't seen a running back screen to Jacobs all year.
I don't remember one.
I think we attempted one that got blown up. But yeah, if we can't even remember, it's really not that many. Yeah.
I mean, Jalen Richard, great screen player. Really, really good screen runner.
He's not very good at getting his players out in space. Like, it's all has to be like, this is the route combination. This is where you get on the ball. But it's like not a lot of getting his players.
But also Jacobs isn't really like, again, like, love Jacobs. But he's also not really like a home run hitter either. Like, when I'm thinking like screens, I'm thinking dudes that are going to like just go, right? Just like get some open space and fight. Like, right? He's giving some to Waller, obviously, which that makes perfect sense. But I don't think of Josh Jacobs as this like screen speedster dude, you know?
In the screen game, tackles
runner.
You don't have to be the fastest guy to be an effective runner of screenplays. You have to be a patient runner. You have to be able to hit the hole, which Jacobs can do both. Yeah. It's basically a run play that's shifted out wide. That's basically what a screenplay is. And that's exactly what Jacobs will give you. He's a patient runner. He's a tough runner. He's not going to go shifty back and forth. He's going to find the hole. He's going to hit it. And that's he's built for screens.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the game plans, right? If you're playing up against a defense that you know is going to be blitz heavy, like, I don't know, the Jets with Greg Williams, throw a fucking screen into the play game plan. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you know that they're going to be rushing the passer and they're pinning their ears back, a well-timed screen on third down, especially, you know, as you said, Juan, it's situational. It doesn't have to be a home ball, a home run every time. Like, we just need a third down conversion. Fuck, we were 0-11 on third down the last game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, yeah, if I'm doing screens, I like Ruggs. Also, because, like, Jacobs is just so beat up, it's kind of nice just to, like, all right, screens, let's give it to somebody else. Because Jacobs just keeps hurting himself every single season with the way he runs.
Hasn't done that either.
So check this shit out, right? Imagine if you lined up in the backfield. Derek Carr's running shotgun, I think 70% of – more than that, 80% of our plays now. So let's say you've got Ruggs split out wide, Jacobs offset, and you split Jacobs out wide right, and you brought Ruggs back into the backfield. And then – the first play of the game, you throw a wide receiver screen to Jacob split out right with Waller and Bryan Edwards blocking for him. Mm-hmm. And then later on in the game, you do the exact same motion, and instead you bring Ruggs into the backfield and then throw him a screen on third down. You know what I'm saying? Like, we have so many weapons, and there's so many ways to use them that I just don't see in our offensive game planning. And we can nitpick when we're, you know, 0-11 on third down and doing so bad in the red zone.
Another thing, another stat from Josh Dubow of the Associated Press brought this up. This is a tweet that he did on the 29th. John Gruden traded 2 third-round picks, 2 fifth-rounders to acquire wide receivers Antonio Brown, Zay Jones, and Martavis Bryant. They have combined for 52 catches, 530 yards, and 1 touchdown for the Raiders with all 4 of those draft picks. Steelers used 1 of those picks on Deontay Johnson, who has 85 catches for 828 yards and 7 touchdowns this season. Even when Gruden gets his guy at wide receiver, like I just don't think he's a great evaluator of talent. I think it's as simple as that. Like, look what he's
doing. Stats guy. He's stats guy. Well, this guy's got the stats. He's a proven guy. He's made plays. I want him. It's like, no, dude, you can't give away these assets. You can't give away these assets and pay these players. If he's a veteran player, you're going to have to pay him a lot more money.
Yeah.
You can find these guys like Martavis Bryant. I mean, he was not at the peak of his career. Jordy Nelson was well past his prime. I mean, you see Antonio Brown playing now. He's not the same Antonio Brown he was in the past. It's like, man, you're getting all these guys and you're paying them all this money, but it's, I don't know, man. He needs to listen to Mayock more, I think.
I mean, it goes back to the Ruggs thing in the draft, man. You get to cherry pick your dude. You've got every flavor. And he walked in and Ruggs was his flavor, and then he doesn't know how to use him. We don't design looks to him. We don't feature him. You know, game one of the season, I was super excited about how we used Ruggs. I think we got him 7 touches before his knee injury. But we were just, you know, we were getting in the ball, and it was paying off, man. We picking up chunk yards.
You brought something up, Soto, about the red zone and Daniel Carlson and his field goal attempts.
So he has 36 attempts, I think, this year. 36 attempts. Mm-hmm. He missed 2 field goals. He missed an extra point, but he's missed 2 field goals. 18 of his 36 attempts have been 29-yard line or closer. So that means with the snap and the end zone, we're on at the furthest the 12-yard line when we're kicking these field goals.
Yeah.
And that's a problem. You say, okay, well, you know, maybe it's a statistical thing. Maybe just, you know, that's happening this year. Last year, Carlson wasn't our kicker the entire year. He had 19 field goals. 8 of them were 29-yard line or closer. You want to know to take a stab at what the next closest 29 and closer field goal kicker is this year? How many they have?
Couldn't guess. Half that?
11.
Yeah.
Almost half as many. He's lapping these guys. I mean, and it just, that's the biggest stat for me on our red zone issues.
I mean, it's a no-brainer, right? Like, that's why Daniel Carlson's just, like, cranking it this year, because you're just kicking all these field goals in the red zone. It's like, clearly a major issue. It's something that's got to be addressed again in the offseason. We talked to the Las Vegas Review-Journal's Adam Hill about this very thing. So let's go. Let's toss it over to Adam Hill, who joined us right here on the Autumn Windbags. All right, joining us from the Las Vegas Review-Journal, Adam Hill. You can check him out on Twitter, at Adam Hill, LVRJ. It throws me off every time, Review-Journal and RJ. Adam Hill joining us now on the Autumn Windbags. How you doing, Adam?
I'm good. Also, the 3 L's in a row.
Adam!
Yeah, what's up, man? Yeah, that throws people off. I probably should have picked a better name when I started my Twitter handle, but what are you going to do? So we roll.
Well, you only have the second worst Twitter handle on this show, because Rory's Twitter handle is literally – R-O-R, and then like 7 underscores in a row. I'm not kidding.
I don't even know how many. That's what's crazy about it.
I have to copy and paste it from Twitter every time I put it in like our bios and like our YouTube and stuff. I'm not going to remember that. Like,
that's worse.
It's terrible.
It's amazing. I realized I was posting some pretty fucked up shit on Twitter, and I didn't want anyone to be able to find me.
Oh, you one of those. Oh, Rory's a net banger.
Just come up with a second account then, right?
Yeah. Get a burner account.
I know, man. Look, it all spiraled. This wasn't supposed to happen.
Get a KD account like he has.
That's why you never retweet our shit. It's because you're hiding in plain sight on Twitter. You know the whole point of Twitter is to reach people and have them see you, not to hide.
Yeah, I got to start from scratch.
Stand I thought by. the whole point of Twitter was people just harassing me all day, every day. That's fun.
I think the three L's were for the Raiders, because they bunch them in threes too.
It's been ugly lately.
Yeah, what's up with? I mean, it's the, you know, you'd be making a lot more money than all of us put together for you. The actual answer to this question, but what is with the late season collapses these last 2 seasons? Is there like something specific?
I mean, I don't think there's anything specific. Like, there's nothing you notice, you know, sitting at the games and watching them and saying, you know, what's going on here? And listen, is it a collapse? I mean, they've had a couple of games that they could have won, that could have gone either way. Last game was a miracle to lose it. So I don't want to say there's anything like maybe that was in common for both of the seasons. I'll say this, like, when they were 6-3, I was doing an interview and somebody said, why is this team so good? And my answer was, are they? Like, I never was totally blown away, but if you look back, you beat the Saints, one of the best teams in the league. You beat the Chiefs, the best team in the league. You're competing with some of these really good teams, and it just, for some reason, whatever it is, like on certain days, they were able to come through and get wins and look at their best. And the other days they just weren't very good. But even at 6-3, I never thought they were that good. I thought they were just kind of overperforming what they were. And now, you know, they fall apart down the stretch, fall to 7-8. They have a chance to get back to 8-8, but I just think that's what they are. I think they're an 8-8 team. I think that's what they were at the start of the year. I think that's what they are now.
Well, if it was just their defense, it'd be an 0-16 team. Like, it's like not just bad, but like historically so terrible. What did the players think of Paul Guenther? Like, did they like him, or was there, were they happy to, you think, to see him go?
So these questions are really weird this year because we're not in the locker room anymore.
Yeah.
So like last year I was in the locker room after every game, after every practice. It's 45 minutes required that the players just kind of hang out with us in the media, which I'm sure they love. But you've really got good senses. Like, you would sit there and just to go behind the scenes a little bit, like what it's like to cover the team, like you would sit there and just talk to guys for 45 minutes. We talked a lot about, you know, I started watching certain TV shows only because certain players just wanted to talk about those shows. And then you would like, there's relationships, right?
Need your icebreaker.
Yeah. Well, and then a couple guys found out that, you know, our background a little bit. I covered UFC for 12 years and a couple guys found out about that. And like, they would literally, as soon as they had to talk to media, would just find me and like, all right, let's talk UFC for 20 minutes and kill my time here.
Yeah.
Richie Incognito being like the main one. Richie Incognito just loves UFC and would just come over and just talk. And so when you're having those conversations, you know, you get those off the record, like, oh, by the way, you know, while we're talking about this fight, what do you think about this? Or what do you think about this guy? What's going on here? And you'd get so much better of a sense of what was going on with the team. And this year it's all through Zoom. Everything's through Zoom. Every once in a while, you'll get a player hit you up and be like, hey, I want to talk about something or whatever. But like those conversations, those daily conversations about what's going on the team just don't happen anymore. So I'm just prefacing your question of like, what do they feel? Last year, I can tell you that, I mean, they loved him as a person for sure. And I think they trusted in, John Gruden's trust in him, if that makes sense to you. Like, okay. John Gruden thinks this guy's great.
Trusted him by proxy.
We trust John Gruden, so that's our guy. So we're going to go with it. Mm-hmm. But I think there was an element at some point of, hey, look, we keep doing the same things over and over, and they're not working. And, you know, Paul Guenther was put in a bad position of, I think, some questionable draft picks that were supposed to be a lot better, some free agent signings that didn't quite work out to the level that they had hoped. Like, the personnel just wasn't there. But you do need, as a coach, to figure out how to put your personnel in the right place. And, you know, the key of all of this, I think you just look at Jonathan Abram. Like, you don't have to look much further than how they treat Jonathan Abram. Jonathan Abram was brought in as a first-round safety. You expect, if you're a coach, you're a defensive coordinator, that you get a safety in the first round out of the SEC, that he's going to be a beast that can do anything.
Yeah.
And he's just going to take over. Well, obviously, he doesn't play last year. He comes back this year, and they find out pretty quickly that he is atrocious in pass coverage. He can't cover anybody. He gets lost all the time. But when they play him close to the line of scrimmage, and they're just like, dude, go get the ball. Just go find the ball and get it. Like, you're a little kid again.
Yeah.
Jonathan Abram's really good at that. At times, he can be effective. He can make plays. And so you need, as a coach, and I'm just, this is a very micro level example, but you need, as a coach, to figure out those types of things. Where are my guys good? Where do they have strengths? And how can I put them in the best position to make plays? And I think that might have been maybe a little bit of the downfall of Paul Guenther's, like, I'm just going to run my system.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do what I do. And if these players can't figure it out, well, that's on them. Well, in the end, it's on you. Like, you need to figure out how to make those players better. And I don't think he did that.
And I'm not totally sold. Like, you're right. But I'm not totally sold that these players are just bad. Because, like, okay, that could explain, you know, the draft picks, young guys, you know, they were great in college, but how are they going to do in the pros? You know, sink or swim. But it doesn't explain, like, Corey Littleton sucking. Like, I'm
it
a
kinda
big...
does.
Does it? Kind of
does. Listen, Corey Littleton is an unbelievable coverage linebacker. But then when you put him in a role of, like, hey, go play linebacker in a, like, a traditional form, that's really not his best thing. Now, he also, I think, was injured quite a bit, which was kind of hidden a little bit under the radar. He still tried to play through it. He wasn't at his best. But I think that they were putting him in roles that he wasn't really accustomed to. And then Nick Kwiatkowski, who has been pretty good for most of the year, goes down early in the season for a couple games. And then they kind of moved Littleton into that role for some periods of time. That wasn't working. But you're right. Like, again, you go and get Corey Littleton, who you look at the last couple of years, he's been an elite coverage linebacker.
I was doing backflips in the hallway when they made that signing.
Great. And I will tell you that, you know, his old defensive coordinator, Wade Phillips, is kind of, you know, using that as his in to try to get the job of, I know how to use Corey Littleton. You've got him. I know how to use him really well. Bring me in and I'll show you how to make him effective. So I know that's part of what his pitch is, to become the defensive coordinator. But they, you know, he believes that there's roles that he could play that he could be a lot better. But I just think that, you know, they never really found that mix of what, you know, what Corey Littleton does well and what the defense is asking of him, and to put him in those right positions. Like, I think that's another example of, they just didn't understand how to use him. And those things happen over time. And again, it's not excuses. Everybody had to deal with it. Yeah. He comes in, they don't see him for a whole summer. I think I remember a point in training camp where we were like, well, we asked John Gruden, like, what do you think about Corey Littleton? And then he's like, I haven't met him. I don't know. So it was a really weird offseason to try to get those guys
implemented. Well, it's also like, we have to hope that Paul Gunther was the problem and these players are good. Because, like, think about it. Like, they're not going to, like, they're all, like, either first-round draft picks or expensive free agents. Like, I'm not going to give up on Damon Arnett first-round. I'm not going to give up on Abram a first-rounder. I'm not going to give up on Cleveland Farrell. Like, I'm not going to give up on these high-priced free agents. Like, they're not going to, like, you can't just get rid of these guys. It just doesn't make business sense. They're not going to do it this early, right?
Yeah.
So you have to hope that Paul Gunther was the problem, because you're not going to do a makeover of this defense. It's all first-rounders and high-priced free agents.
You're right, and that's a scary thing for them trying to go into this offseason. But, you know, I think there are things. Like, look at and listen, the Miami offense is atrocious, but they played pretty well for three quarters. Now, they weren't ready for Fitzpatrick. They obviously had everything scouted with Tua. They were ready for a left-handed quarterback. They were ready for his tendencies. They played really well. So I thought they were schemed into playing pretty well. And again, if you want to say Miami's offense sucks, which they do, and Tua didn't play well, fine. But what terrible offense has the Raiders been able to take advantage of? None. So there is some progress to Marinelli and what he was doing and putting them in some better spots. But you're right. Like, they need to figure out what to do with these guys. And I think that would involve, okay, you want to use Jonathan Abram, that's fine. He has to play closer to the line. Now you have to bring in a more traditional safety to play alongside of him that can cover some of those things on the back end of the defense, and then let Abram go make plays. I still have pretty high hopes for Trayvon Mullen, despite the, you know, four flag game a couple weeks ago. I think he can be a really good player. I still think Arnett can be pretty good, although, you know, the miscommunication with Isaiah Johnson on the last play against Miami was, you know, unforgivable, because even if you don't understand what you're doing in that play, like, why are you playing the short flat when if they want to throw a 5-yard pass, go right ahead?
Yeah, like, that's basic football.
It literally required a Hail Mary and a penalty. They right. Got it.
But also, Arnett, if he didn't understand the coverage, in your mind, you're like, hey, I've got a safety behind me, which he did. Isaiah Johnson was supposed to be there, and he wasn't. But even if that's the case, why on earth are you covering the flat? Like, in your mind, you have to say, oh, this is what they want me to do? I probably shouldn't do this. I should probably back up, because if they want to throw – there's 19 seconds. If they want to throw a 5-yard out, say it takes 4 or 5 seconds. Okay, now there's 14 or 13 seconds left, and you've gained 5 yards. Good. Good for you. Like, that's the right play. So why are you covering the flat?
How long did that ball hang in the air for you? I thought it was like an eternity. That ball was in there for so long.
So I think it's a different scenario, like, being there. So I didn't even remember, but a couple of the other reporters in the press box told me that as I'm watching the play go, I was actually watching that side of the field. Like, I was looking at that side, and I see Arnett just stop and let him go behind him, and I see Fitzpatrick look that way and go to throw it. So I didn't actually see Fitzpatrick throw it. I just saw a receiver wide open, and I go, oh, boy.
I saw Fitzpatrick looking at the back end zone with his head doing a 180.
And I was just laughing. Like, I just, so, you know, so people know, I think, you know, there's no cheering in the press box, and I'm not a Raiders fan anyway. I couldn't care less about the outcome of the game. But it was just more of like a, oh, boy, how are you going to let this guy? Like, you're just going to let a guy run down the field when there's 19 seconds? Like, okay, I guess that's what you're doing now. So It was just a reaction. I mean, you're right. It was just hanging there. And I was like, wait, did he throw it to him? Like, where? Oh, there's the ball. Okay. Completion. Crazy. And everything had to go wrong. As you said, not only do they have to get wide open, not only do they have to catch the pass, they also have to get the penalty, because without the penalty, they're still in some trouble there. They still have to complete another pass.
It was the 40, right? The 41 yard line or something like that.
41 yard line. And they weren't going to let Sanders kick it from 60. So they would have had to run another play. And if you tackle somebody in bounds, the game's over. It was, everything had to go wrong there. And you can tell the frustration. Yep.
Well, let me ask you, what's the mood of the defense in particular after the move to Marinelli and the team in general after these last couple of heartbreaking losses?
Well, I think you would tell more. Like, I think you would have been able to see a different mood if they would have won. I think there was some confidence that came out of it, but listen, the guys that talked after the game on Saturday were miserable, obviously, and you can understand. I mean, they had a faint glimmer of a hope of making the postseason, and then it goes away on that.
Yeah,
like you can understand why they were pretty down. I thought, you know, today Vic Beasley spoke to the media, and you know, I think he's in a different position where he's like, he's kind of deciding what his future is going to be, kind of auditioning a little bit for the Raiders. He was pretty upbeat, but I think that's a more of a personal, you know, he has some goals personally that he wants to try to take care of and kind of showcase himself. Mm-hmm. You could kind of tell like there was a little bit of, okay, maybe there's something here. Maybe this is fixable. Maybe it's salvageable. And I think more you can kind of tell from the offense that was a little bit excited about, hey, the defense kept us in the game. You know, they gave it up at the end. They kept us in the game, and that's all the offense can really ask for, because the offense has been, you know, good for most of the season, and I think that they believe that they can win games if you just stop somebody once in a while.
Mm-hmm. I think we'll see more of that next year. I hope. I really do. At the end of the day, with the Arnett and Isaiah Johnson thing, it's two really inexperienced players, one of them playing out of position. You know, if you're going to hang your hat on defense, it's not going to be that play. It was disappointing, but again, given the context of what happened that week, it's understandable. It doesn't mean it doesn't hurt. It still hurt a ton, but again, like I always go back to the offense in this discussion because that's where you're looking for the points. That's where you're looking for the leadership and whatever else. I thought we could have done more earlier on in the game, but for it to come down to that sort of a play, especially after what happened with the Jets game.
It's like the Jets in reverse.
Yeah.
I mean, every Raider fan at this point is prepared for that type of scenario. But it's still
numb to the pain. I got the you know, standard issue text messages from my asshole friends after that loss. And it's like, oh, how pissed are you? And it's like, I'm dead inside. I was pissed 2 weeks ago. Now it's just like standard operating procedure.
And I said I was the batter, like a battered wife. Like, I've been beat so much, it's like, oh, I just start making excuses now. Like, you know, it's they had a rough game. They played really well. It's like, I don't really care anymore. It happens.
So, Adam, you were talking earlier a little bit about, you know, the players trusting Gruden's process with Paul Gunther. Do you think Gruden is on the hot seat after what we've seen again towards the season end?
John Gruden is the coach as long as John Gruden wants to be the coach.
Mark Davis loves him.
He loves him, and he signed him to a ridiculous contract. He's got the job as long as he wants it. Now
they can still fire him, right?
Yeah, I feel like there's still outs, right?
They'd have to pay him.
Yeah, that's guaranteed, bro. It's not like a player contract.
They would have to negotiate. Yeah, they'd have to negotiate a buyout. Yeah, they would have to negotiate because they like say they fired him this year, and they're like, all right, we owe you $70 million over the next 7 years. We're not going to pay you that, but they would negotiate some sort of buyout. Listen, it's John Gruden's job as long as he wants it. But my question is, how long does he want it? Like, I think there's a legitimate question. I'm going to ask him on Monday at his the post-mortem press conference, as they call it. Are you back? Like, do you want to coach this team anymore? You came back. You're making all this money. There's no losses in the broadcast booth. He would get a massive contract to go back to TV. Why on earth do you want to do this? Why? I wouldn't. There's no chance I would want to keep this job. I would go right back to the booth. There's no reason to keep coaching and keep losing, keep taking the criticism. Guess what happens if you say something wrong in the booth? Nobody cares. They might say something on Twitter, and then you move on. You have to hear it every day when you're the coach.
Mm. Sure.
Well, he gets 100 million reasons why he coaches. I mean,
he'd
guess
get more.
Part of it.
Look at the deal Romo got. He would get more to go back to broadcasting.
You think he would get
crazy
that crazy of a deal after shitting the bed with the Raiders, though?
Like, I don't think he'd get 17 like Romo. I think he'd get 12 or 13. Yeah, he'd get more
to work one day a week, essentially.
Well, I mean, and think about and I'll tell you this, we stopped going to the facility, 4 weeks ago when, you know, community spread got to a point where they're like, you can't go into the facility anymore. But until then, I was getting tested every day at the facility, you know, the COVID testing so that I can go in and go to practices every day. I will tell you this, if I got there for my test at 6 a.m., John Gruden's car was there. If I went back there to, like, you know, pick something up or do something at the facility, like 8 p.m., John Gruden's car is there. Like, it never leaves. So, like, that guy is just working all the time, and you know that he wants to win. He wants to get the job done. He wants to do this. He's passionate about it. But at some point, and maybe that's just me, that I'd be like, I'll take the check for no criticism. Maybe that says something about me, but I wouldn't keep doing this if I was him.
Well, you say that he's there a lot, but I mean, how involved was he with the defense? Was he, I mean, because we speculated about how often and how much input he had with the defense.
I would guess very little.
Yeah, that's what we did.
He trusted Gunther. Like, they were really close friends. They used to drive to the facility together when they lived up in the Bay Area. You know, they were super close. And I think he just said, hey, go do your thing. I'm going to go do my thing on the offensive side. And, you know, we'll coach our side. He was basically an offensive coordinator that also, you know, helped out with being the GM and everything else. So I think he kind of left it to Gunther a little bit to just do his own thing. And I think he'll do that with whoever the defensive coordinator is. I know who I think it should be. Like I said, there's other people. Rod Marinelli, I'm sure, is going to, you know, lobby to keep the job. And we already said, you know, Wade Phillips is pushing for it. I think on Twitter he's tweeted about it a couple times. Mm-hmm. I would imagine every media person has received a text from Wade Phillips to lobby for him to be the coordinator. He really wants a job. But to me, I would be hiring Raheem Morris if it was my decision to make. I don't think he's getting the Atlanta job. Him and Gruden are very close. Gruden thinks very highly of him. And I don't know how many people have been paying attention to the Falcons. I know they saw him against the Raiders. But since he took over, that's been a completely different team. That dude can coach. And I would say that'd be a pretty good candidate.
I'm just worried another team swoops him up as a head coach after what he did with the Falcons. That's what I'm absolutely worried about.
Oh, absolutely. Like, obviously, that's a very strong possibility. The Falcons could hire him, although I kind of think they're getting the enemy. But yeah, he's definitely a candidate right there with, you know, Sala and all these other guys. Like Joe Brady, I would think about hiring. He's only been a coordinator for 1 year with Carolina on the offensive side, but that dude has been successful everywhere. So there's going to be candidates for all these head coaching jobs. And if Morris doesn't get one, I would think he'd be right in line for the Raiders.
I love Morris. I love that call. How do you think he fits though, in terms of schematically? Like, we obviously wouldn't have to do as much as we would with Wade Phillips going to a base 3-4, I'd assume. But
yeah,
how do you think that fits?
Well, I don't think they're tied to anything. I don't think they're married to anything. I think that's the other key. I think, like we said, I think that the defense is pretty autonomous with the Raiders, that they're just like we said with Gunther, hey, go do your thing. I think they do the same with Morris, whatever you want to do. And I don't think that they have anybody. Well, first of all, I don't think Raheem Morris would necessarily be tied to anything specific. I think he changes up quite a bit, but I also don't think there's any players that you would say, hey, we need to design our defense around this guy. Like, who's the guy that you say, hey, we really need this guy in the right, you know, in the system defensively. We need a defense that fits this guy. I don't think there is one. I don't think there's that kind of talent on the defensive side that you need to say, hey, he needs to be in the system and we need to put this system in for him. I think you just play whatever defense you're going to play and find the pieces to fit there.
You're talking about how you're talking about like TV shows with the Raiders. What's the weirdest show that a Raider watches? You're like, I had no idea that Derek Carr loves The Bachelorette.
Wow, that's a good question. I got to think back on some of the stuff that we were watching last year. I'll say the most popular one, which I had to start. Well, I haven't watched enough of it, but I watched like a little bit of one just to get like the sense, because so many guys watch it, is Power. Like, they freaking love – I didn't know if I could curse, sorry. They love that show.
Let it fly, and, like, man. Let it fly.
you would go in there. Like, you would go in the locker room, and there would be, like, arguments. And you'd be starting to figure out, like, what is going on? Like, what is happening? I don't understand why they're so angry and, like, what's happening here? And actually, the guy I would kind of talk to the most when there was, like, a lot of commotion is A.J. Cole, the punter. He's an awesome dude. He's so great. And I would just be like, you know, like, A.J., what's going on? And he's like – I don't know. These dudes are just arguing about Power, and I can't figure any of it out. And I'm like, okay.
The token white guy is trying to get on the Power discussion.
He's a punter. He's white and he's a punter. Yeah.
But his I can't wait to see how the lockers are situated here. But his locker in Oakland, in Alameda at the facility, was over by the receivers and the DBs. And that was kind of really where the discussion would be centered. And so he would just be like in the middle of it all. And I'd be like, okay, like now I'm caught up at least a little bit on this. So that was a good one. But yeah, it would just be, I use TV shows as an example, but it would be mostly, like, you would just figure out what guys are into. Like I said, talk UFC, a couple guys like baseball actually, which is kind of weird. I was kind of thrown off by that one. So you would, you know, talk some baseball, whatever. Just whatever, you just kind of figure out what topics guys are comfortable with and what they would be more interested in talking about than football, because you don't get very much if you just walk up and you're like, hey, what's going on with the coordinator? Like, what do you think?
Give me a scoop now.
Yeah, tell me something that I don't know, please.
Yeah,
but yeah, you just gotta talk and kind of get into their world a little bit.
Who's the coolest Raider to hang out with? Like, who's just like the coolest guy?
Oh man, I mean, I tend to trend toward Jalen Richard.
Okay.
Fun guy, but also like he gets it. Like, always willing to talk. You know, if there's a controversial subject, something like that, you know that you're gonna be able to go up to him and just be like, "Hey man, what's going on with this?" And whether it's on the record or off the record, like, you know, and I'm not saying he'll like spill stuff, but he'll just be like, "Hey, you know, can't really talk about those things, but you know, it's just this." Mm-hmm. And he always is understanding of what your job is, and he's always cool. Returns texts, that kind of thing, like all the time. So I've always loved dealing with Jalen Richard. I'm just trying to think, like, you know, Zay Jones is pretty cool, which I know he had a little bit of weird trouble down in LA a couple years ago. But I've always thought he's really, really cool person, just kind of talk to and hang out and be around. And some of the offensive linemen, you know, Gabe Jackson, even though he's quiet, doesn't really say much, just a good dude. I like those guys. I would like to see what they're like away from football. Cause like, you know, Jackson and Hudson, those guys are like so quiet, but you get the sense that they're like, they're just really good guys that are, you know, mm-hmm. are just cool to like, to be around and hang out with. And I want to say it was Antonio Brown last year, but
kind of a mess. That would be a party, hanging out with Antonio Brown. You'll end up like pantsless in Tijuana or something.
But yeah, but you get skeeted on your back though. You don't want that.
That's true. I will say, as awful as that was last year. So I, you know, I went and lived in Napa for, you know, 5 weeks or whatever it was training camp last year. Every day, like, you would wake up and just look at your phone and be like, what now? Like, what now?
Yeah, it was
and
bad.
In the moment for those 5 weeks, because you would just get a text from either the PR staff of the Raiders or one of the other players' agents or somebody, like, you're not going to believe what's going on today. And you'd just be like, oh God, like, what's happening? And in the moment, it sucked. It sucked.
I would have thought he was a writer's dream, especially if you don't care about the Raiders, right? Like, us fans are like, God damn it, he's imploding this team. But like, no, he's just content for days.
He is. And that's why, like, looking back, it was cool. It was great to have around because you got to, you know, you got some of those stories all the time. But like, you want to tell a story, right? Like, there's stories you want to tell of like, hey, I want to sit and talk to whatever, Tyrell Williams today, or I want to go talk to whoever, right? Like, I want to tell this guy's story. You're like, oh no, I gotta write about Antonio Brown not liking his helmet today, so that's gonna be what my focus is and my feature is. So like, in the moment it sucked because there's so many other things you wanted to do and you couldn't, but mm-hmm. at the same time, looking back, you're like, what a time to like cover this team of just complete chaos every single day. It was nuts.
Yeah.
You must have some pretty special insight. I mean, this is one of the things that the three of us really don't get the opportunity to see at all, that you have insight on, Adam, is just like the locker room dynamics, not only with coaches, but also the actual players themselves. So I was lucky enough to go to training camp last year in Napa as well. It was my first time there. It was always a dream of mine, like, just to see the behind the scenes.
He just went there for wine tasting. He didn't even watch the training camp.
He wanted to see Hunter Renfro.
I was there for the grinders, man. I was there for the grinders. The great Rose wine grinders in Napa. But Eric Harris was a guy that I began to see why coaches loved him so much. He was, you know, he's so vocal. He was a vocal leader. And that's not something that fans really have that sort of insight on unless you're at the games in the front row.
Yeah.
So, like, who are the players that you wouldn't expect to necessarily leading from behind the scenes, you know?
I mean, that's an interesting one. And I think part of his is that he's an older player, but somebody who's, like, been through so much. Like, he had to fight and scrap and claw his way up there. Mm-hmm. And you know, he was somebody that was never, he's not a first round pick. He's a guy, you know, went to Canada and I think he worked at a potato chip factory, if I remember correctly. Like, there was some weird job that he had.
Some crazy story. Yeah.
Dream job.
Yeah. Yes. For you, Soto.
So guys like that, like, yeah, guys that have had a little bit of time to be around the league and to try to, you know, get to that level. I think are the guys that are kind of going to emerge in the way that you're talking about. LaMarcus Joyner actually is kind of, you know, similar position, I guess, in the secondary, but another guy who just has been around for a long time and, you know, little dude, but, you know, he speaks much, his words carry more weight than some of the other guys. I think, you know, a guy like Nick Kwiatkowski has come in and been, you know, that position kind of calls for that leadership, but he's kind of been that guy that's been able to do that. And then, you know, I think on the offensive side, there is there's zero question, and it's not a surprise. Like, you kind of were looking, I think, for guys that can be surprised by. If Rodney Hudson says a word, everybody shuts the hell up and listens to everything that he says.
That's so sweet.
It's not often. It's not often that he talks. It's not often that he talks, but when he does, it means something. Like, that dude gets so much.
Give us an example. Did you witness an example?
It's more like if you're watching, you see on the practice field, like, he's a guy that doesn't talk. You hear all these guys talking, chirping, whatever, and like, he might go 3 days without saying a word, but then all of a sudden he starts talking, and then like, everyone is just like focused. Like, what does he say? Let's hear what he says.
Yeah.
In locker room, he never talked. Never. He's like the only guy that would just like, he'd come in, get his stuff, sit down. If he has to talk to a media person, he answers their questions, whatever. But then he's gone. Like, he's just not a talker. And again, that's around us. So a lot of times, you know, I'll use this caveat because, you know, you've been around athletes a long time too, RJ. There's guys that you think are really quiet, because when you talk to them, they don't really want to say a whole lot because you're media and you're just like, whatever.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, if you're not around, the guys will be like, no, that guy is a prankster. He's a jokester. He's always talking. He's always doing something. We have started to change into another Vegas sport here. But we have the Golden Knights here, and I was covering them for a while in between UFC and the Raiders. I was on the Golden Knights beat. So there's a guy, Nick Holden. He's a defenseman, a veteran guy on the team, who, like, you would go in and he's like the quietest dude, incredibly respectful, but like, you know, you'd ask him like, hey, you know, last night you guys did a great job in the penalty kill. He'd be like, yeah, you know, we did our best, and you know, we tried, and you know, we did whatever we could, and just like super, super quiet. And so I always assumed, hey, that's who Nick Holden is. And then all the other guys on the team would be like, no, dude, that guy is out of control. He's like wild, man. He's crazy. Like, whenever you guys aren't here, like, he is nuts. And I was like, yeah, whatever. Okay. And then one day I was around the team and I was the only media person there, and he was kind of like, he was just so loud and boisterous and around. And I was like, okay, that is weird. Like, I don't get where that switch is. So like, when I'm saying these, like, who the guys that I notice or the guys that I think are a certain way doesn't necessarily mean they are when we're not around. But that's just what we observe there. So
that's how Gruen's going to get his meetings to everyone shut up. It's like, if you guys don't shut up, I'm going to bring Adam Hill in here right now, and I know you guys will stop acting up.
Yeah. I don't think they would care.
He like Belichick to you, like, to the meetings is like real, like, you know, real dry, yeah. but you see like some interviews with him off, you know, away from the team, and he's super funny.
I mean, is he, or do we judge him on, like, obviously Belichick
sliding
or
scale?
Do we judge him on a scale of, like, if he says something, like, he puts his dog on a chair and we're like, that Belichick's hilarious. Like, okay, it's the normal. Just because Belichick's never funny doesn't mean he gets a lower bar for humor.
Oh, I was trying to make that for myself, too. Oh, no. Okay.
Adam saw right through you, Soto.
Damn it.
It doesn't work on him.
Jesus. Well, I brought up Belichick. He's one of the coaches, the defensive guys, at least, that shut down the Raiders. Like, the offense was the issue that game. New England, and also Raheem Morris with Atlanta. I mean, how predictable is Gruden? I mean, those are two guys that know him. I mean, how predictable is Gruden with his play calling?
I mean, I feel like he's getting a little better, but every time I think he's getting better, it feels like it kind of sets back. Listen, I doubted the Gruden experiment with him coming back, mostly because he was successful, you know, 15, 20 years ago. The game is totally different now. He definitely has, you know, the grinder mentality, the old school. He's definitely got that in his head, and I just think the game has evolved so much. So I doubted that he would come in and really make a huge impact on offense. So to your point, how predictable is he? I think he is very predictable, but at the same time, like, their offensive numbers have been really good. They were good last year. They were great this year. So just because I think he's predictable, and just because we think he's an old school guy, doesn't necessarily mean he is, because it works. You can't really doubt the fact that he's been successful at the offense. They've been, you know, scoring points. Now, I feel like they're pretty predictable in the red zone, and in the red zone, they've been pretty bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've tried. I saw, you know, stat the other day. It was circulating on Twitter, so you guys might have seen it. But they have set the mark in the last 30 years in the NFL for most field goals inside of 30 yards in a season. So, I mean,
I actually pulled that stat.
Yeah, 18. They're kicking way too often inside, you know, the 12, 13 yard line. You can't do that. Like, he's been hesitant to go for it. They're second in the league in fourth down conversions. Actually, they might be first now after last
That's why week. Daniel Carlson has like insane numbers because he's making like 22 yard field goals every game.
He's leading the league in points.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Is he really?
But, yeah.
He has two missed field goals and one missed extra point. And one of those field goals was the Cleveland fucking left hook from hell kick that was started outside the right upright and went three freaking rows into the stands.
And one was a missed extra point this week that was kind of relevant.
Yeah. A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's, you know, he's an offensive guy and he's been successful as an offensive coach for a long time. I just feel like there needs to be more creativity in the red zone. And I think there needs to be more aggressiveness going forward on fourth down. Like I said, I think they're second or third least amount of attempts on fourth down, but the highest percentage. Maybe you should try to going for it more.
What do you attribute like the issues on the red zone to, though? I mean, is it more Gruden? Is it more Carr? Like, I mean,
I do think so. I think there's a little bit of both, and I think for one, I think that's where maybe some of the lack of creativity or the lack of ingenuity from Gruden, that maybe, you know, things that worked 20 years ago that might not work now, maybe that's showing up a little bit. But I also think one of the criticisms of Carr, which I think has been fair, even though, he's been great. And every time you say, hey, he's been great, but this little thing, all the Carr fans just get furious at you and have to deal with that all the time. But he's had a great season. But I think some of it is showing up again that he doesn't like to take a lot of chances. And, you know, that has been successful. Like, hey, dump it down. Let your running back, you know, catch it for 3 yards and run for 7 or 8 more. That's great. Dump it down to like Darren Waller, let him make a play, go down the field. That's fine. But then when you get inside the 20, if you're not taking chances, the field is so shrunk in there that you've got to try to force the ball in there every now and then. And if you're not willing to do that, you know, oftentimes you're going to see the drive stall a little bit. While it works really good between the 20s, once you get inside there, you've got to every once in a while try to force some tight windows.
And the defense is not stopping anybody. So you need touchdowns. You don't need threes. You need sevens because you're giving up sevens.
You do, but they're actually, and I saw that the other day, and I don't have my numbers in front of me. I wish I would have these, because I was doing some research the other day about average starting field position, and it actually hasn't been that bad. You would think as bad as the defense has been, it's almost always a kickoff. It's almost always a touchback. Mm-hmm. You would think that their starting field position would be like at the bottom of the league, but it hasn't been. They've actually had some decent starting field position on average this year. So, you know, but you're right. You do have to know, and that puts pressure on the offense too. Like, hey, we don't just have to get the ball down the field. We have to score touchdowns every time, or else, you know, we're just going to get blown out because the defense is going to give a touchdown. So that becomes a little bit more difficult to score when you have all that pressure every time.
I struggle with the idea that we listened to Gruden talk about the red zone offense all offseason last year. You know, what do we got to improve on? We got to improve in the red zone. Damn. And then we start the year and we're not only just red fucking hot on third down, but also really, really good first drive of the game, and then also in the red zone. And to see it just drop off like this, obviously we start asking questions now. And I feel like every single week we talk about his personnel mismanagement, Adam, where it's, you know, Witten versus Moreau is obviously the one that's getting the most press right now. It's really hard to justify. He's such an incredible red zone target. He looks like an incredible combo tight end, a really bright future in front of him after a really good rookie season and coming back off of injury. And we're dialing up designed offensive looks in the red zone to Witten at the expense of other guys. And it's really difficult to get behind Gruden in those scenarios. The same thing can be said about Josh Jacobs, the running game, but also getting him involved in the passing game. We just haven't done the basics well enough. And it's really disappointing because it was a point of focus last offseason.
Yeah. I mean, they focus on it, but like, It's tough to come up with it. I was actually trying to, as you were talking, looking through some of my Gruden transcripts, trying to find all the times he's been asked about the red zone recently and what he said. Monday, I don't know if you guys noticed, he kind of started off his press conference with a joke, which I don't know if fans would really go for it. So the first question of the press conference on Monday was, after looking at the film, what was your biggest issue in the red zone on offense? Because again, against Miami, struggled inside the red zone. And he said, well, the last one, we took a knee. Maybe not the
Touché.
Right time. I like it. I like it.
I don't mind it.
I laughed. I laughed it. At it. Yeah, I mean, trust me, I laughed. I thought it was hilarious. But in retrospect, like, you know, you are dealing with some pretty serious issues inside the red zone. But he said, like, he doesn't – this is the kind of answers that he gives, and you never really get inside his head a little bit. He said, we had a good drive on the second possession and scored a touchdown. Two third and goals at the five. I just have to do a better job of trying to find the right play. But the Dolphins are a good defense, and I think we scored enough points to win the game, which is kind of true. Like, if you look back, they said you scored enough points. Your defense needs to get a stop at the end. But you also understand that your defense doesn't get stops very often, so you probably have to score more. It's been a recurring issue. You're right, and I think that's got to be very frustrating for John Gruden. I can't even count how many times he's been asked about their red zone offense. And as we said, the kicking the field goals, I would say part of it is certainly you have to be more aggressive in your play calling in the red zone. You have to be more creative. You know, I don't know if you saw the Bills game on Monday night. But Brian Daboll is just a genius offensive coordinator. It really shows up in the red zone. Like, he's got – how many times does he have, you know, tight end pretending to block, kind of laying down and then crossing the formation where everybody else goes right, tight end goes left. He's got guys wide open. Like, you very rarely see the Raiders run some play where you just get an open receiver just standing there on his own. And you watch around the league, like, all these teams are coming up with, like, creative ways to use different players and get guys involved. And Foster Moreau did it a couple times last year to the point where he was able to, you know, really find some space and to try to, you know, pretend to block, open up into the flat, get wide open. There's different scenarios like that all around the place. They don't really have a whole lot of those plays, and they haven't this year. Part of it, I think, is it, you know, Josh Jacobs is such a good player, such a dynamic running back, but he runs so hard and so physical every single time he touches the ball that I can't even tell you how many times I'm just sitting there watching the game. Like, wait, why is Josh Jacobs? Oh, he's in the tent. Oh, he's talking to the trainers. And I don't think it's a knock on Josh Jacobs. Like, I think he's really, really tough. He's played through a lot, but like when you have that style and you're just hurt all the time, you know, those yards are real tough inside the red zone. And if your body's beat down in the third quarter and you know, you've been going through the battle all game, you know, you're going to be a little step slower. And, you know, that has affected him, I think, a little bit. The creativity, the aggressiveness. I think how often do they have a fourth and one, fourth and two? And other teams go for it. And they end up scoring touchdowns. Raiders kick field goals. They make that decision. They kind of surrender the drive and kick a field goal. So I would think the aggressiveness and the creativity are things that certainly need to be addressed. But listen, we talked about this last season. Like, I think it was one of the few times Gruden actually talked to the media during the shutdown back around the draft time. I think the first question he was asked about, you know, what have you done about working on the red zone this offseason? He's like, oh, you know, we got some stuff, coming up with some stuff. No, haven't really seen much of it.
Nobody does it.
1 yard shots to Jason Witten. There you go. That's my genius.
I don't get it. I don't get the fascination. I don't understand. Every time I see him trotting on the field, I'm like, okay.
You know what it starts with? I think it starts with the running game. I think that was one of the biggest differences between the beginning of the season and the end of the season. Especially in short yardage type scenarios that we're talking about on fourth and one, fourth and two, if a defense doesn't really respect your ability to line up man for man and get those hard yards inside, you don't really have a lot of flexibility all of a sudden with your play action fakes, with spreading them out wide. There's masterful offenses, you know, what Andy Reid's done with the Chiefs. There's all these creative offensive coordinators. But I think a team has to, first of all, respect the fact that you're not going to be able to go straight up the middle for 2 yards, which with our offensive line and Josh Jacobs, and even with Ingold leading the way, you have to lean on that in short yardage scenarios. And we couldn't. We kept getting stuffed.
Well, to that point, I was trying to find the numbers again right here. I'm trying to remember last year. Ingold was like a fourth down specialist last year. And they just fell in love with it. And I think that goes to the creativity point too of at some point, okay, Alec Ingold, I think converted like the first 9 fourth and ones. I think it was 6 runs, 3 little passes out into the flat. And so all of a sudden everybody's like, oh, so they're going to go to Ingold on fourth down. And then they're like, yeah, we're just going to go to Ingold on fourth down. Well, like, where's the playoff of that where, all right, we're going to leak Ingold out and then, you know, run a tight end to the other side. Like they just said, okay, Ingold is our fourth down guy. We're going to go to that. Just like they've gone to, all right, Hunter Renfrow is the third down guy. So we're going to throw to him on third down. And it's effective a lot, but like you need to take that, you know, to take your offense to the next level, to get more dynamic, you have to take that and say, hey, everybody knows this is what we're going to do. So we're going to get you all going that way. We're going to go somewhere else and be creative with it. And I just don't think they've done that enough.
Yeah. They think we're going to go to Jason Witten in the red zone, but really we're going to give him a clipboard and put him on the sideline with a hat on.
That's what we're not going to do we're going to avoid going to Darren Waller at all costs.
Foster Moreau.
God damn it, Adam.
Foster Moreau had 5 red zone touchdowns last year. It's like,
to be fair, he was hurt this year. And it was a long road to recovery for Foster Moreau. And I know, like, listen, at this point in the season, he should be playing a lot more. Early in the season, he was still getting back to full strength. And so I kind of got, all right, the Jason Witten thing and play him. But I think now it's just hey, Jason Witten is kind of my friend in Gruden's mind. Hey, Jason Witten's my friend. He wants to play. Let's let him play. Like, that's kind of the detriment of your team a little bit. And to that end, like, I don't get – and we'll see what he actually does, if this is just lip service or if he does it. When John Gruden was asked about playing some different guys this week and, you know, getting a head start on evaluation for the offseason, right? If you don't know what you have in some of these players, then how are you going to judge them in the offseason if you don't play them? And he said, we're going to do everything we can to put the best players on the field and win this game. Why?
Wow.
Why? Wow. I don't understand. Now, he also later joked and said, you know, who are these young players that you want to play? We're playing young players all the time, which is somewhat true too. But then you look and see, like, they have a ton of players that are over 27 that are taking a lot of snaps. I think they have the highest percentage of players over 27 taking snaps this year on a regular basis. So, like, yeah, they have a lot of young players, but they do still have a lot of old players too. And I don't know why those guys are playing. You know what you have in them. Like, there's no chance I would play Derek Carr this week. Like, you know what you have in Derek Carr. You understand what Derek Carr is. You don't need to evaluate him for the offseason. Do you know what you have in Marcus Mariota? I don't think you do, because he played one game where the team wasn't prepared for a running quarterback because they were prepared for Carr, and he played really well. He also had a terrible training camp because he was injured. His mind was not right. When he came back, he still wasn't right. Then he had a couple good practices. He plays one game. Okay, what do you have? So either you play him in the last game and he's awful, and you're like, okay, we need to figure out something at the backup quarterback spot, or you play him and he's great.
And then
you run up his trade value, right? So if somebody's like, hey, that's a starting quarterback, now you can trade him. But what good is he on the bench for the last game? Zero. And what's your goal? Why do you care about winning? It doesn't matter.
You've opened up a can of worms there, my friend.
Oh, no. Rory's so triggered right now.
It's so triggered. I'm of the opinion that it's really difficult to sit and talk about this offense for the next, I don't know, 6 months. If Carr wasn't to start this game and finish this game, his last game for us, we went 0-10. We're 0-11 on third down. We still couldn't move the ball. We still couldn't do shit in the red zone. That's a horrible way to end the year. So, you know, I hate the idea as well of Mariota coming out and having an absolutely dominant game, and then all of a sudden we've got this back and forth again. Should we start Mariota? Should we start Carr? We know Carr is going to be Gruden's guy going into next year no matter what. So kind of like the Antonio Brown scenario.
I don't know about that. You think so? I listen.
He had a career-high passer rating this season.
And six of 7 years, no playoffs.
That's the defense.
It's not on him. Agreed. It's not on him. I'm not saying Derek Carr isn't the right person. And I'm not saying Derek Carr is going to be gone. But we know what John Gruden has felt about quarterbacks for his whole career. You know, the old saying, he doesn't marry quarterbacks, he dates them. Like, I think you could see the relationship getting to a point, and this is the year where the contract it's doable in terms of getting rid of the contract. Yeah. I could see him making a move. Now, if you made me bet who's the quarterback day one next year, I'm absolutely betting on Derek Carr. Like, he's clearly the favorite, but I don't think he's like minus 800. He's like it's like a minus 250, minus 300. Very likely to be the quarterback day one next year. But if something was going on in the offseason, somebody's available, you're looking around saying, okay, maybe this would be interesting as a quarterback. And I think they might get offers too. You don't think Bill Belichick would want to take a look at Derek Carr? You don't think that maybe even – I think Frank Reich is going to get Carson Wentz. But, you know, a team like the Eagles, if Philip Rivers – or excuse me, the Colts, if Philip Rivers is done, like, there's going to be teams maybe that are interested in what can you get for him. Like I said, I think it's Carr. But I don't think it's a slam dunk 100%. That it's going to be Carr. Now, I also thought last year that Carr was probably going to be done, and certainly was wrong about that. And I'm not. I don't want this to come across as like a bashing on Derek Carr. I think Derek Carr has been really good. I just think it's one of those cases of like John Gruden getting to the point of like, all right, I need to do something different. I need to change this up, and it's worked. The offense has been really good. Carr had a great season, no question about it.
Gruden needs some strange. screwing for
that's,
you.
That's kind of what I'm getting at. Thank you for being classy about it.
I know. I know how to bring the bar down lower. Like a Bill Belichick joke. Last one. True or false? Derek Carr has or is wearing eyeliner?
Oh. Okay. Oh shit!
There's some photo evidence that's pretty damning in that department, Adam. You've been closer to him than we have.
There is, and I think he was asked about this and just kind of chuckled, didn't answer.
Guyliner. That's a guilty answer. Yeah, listen. that means you are. Ooh. It's like when you ask a chick if her boobs are real. If she's like laughs it off, that means they're fake. Because if they're real, you're like, oh no, they're real. Got them from my mama, 100% El Natural.
Yeah, they're real expensive.
If it's anything other than that. Bolt-ons.
I don't know enough about makeup, I guess, to really give me. I have seen the same things you have where I look and I'm like, is he
good?
Is he? I'm not sure. I'm more thrown off all the time by the over oiling of the arms at practice.
Rolled up sleeves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't want no farmer tan, baby.
It's clearly he's just flexing, and it shouldn't you be just worried about practicing? Like, who cares about who's looking at your arms? Like, this is ridiculous. I don't understand. I don't hate that aspect.
Maybe he oiled up the arms to take the subject away from his eyes, the guy liner. You know, he's like, oh shit, I gotta better come with something else. Everyone's onto my makeup.
Why wouldn't you just stop wearing it then? If you're trying to take the attention away from it, if you're wearing the guy liner, you want the attention on your eyes, right? You don't want to take the attention away.
You see, I've had this conversation a million times with girls. They're like, oh, I'm gonna get a boob job. I want it to look natural. It's like, why? If you're gonna make them awesome, right?
Go
like,
for it.
Why would you spend $10,000 to look like you didn't spend $10,000? You know what
make
I mean?
Make them look like 10 grand titties.
So maybe Derek Carr's that way. He's like, oh, it's gonna look real natural. No one's gonna know. They're just gonna think I have beautiful lashes. Like, nah, dog, you're wearing guy liner.
I mean, it could just be natural. He could just have naturally glowy eyes.
That's why I don't know, son.
I don't know,
son.
That's
why I asked you. I don't think it is, but that's why I try to get to the bottom of it.
Listen, these are the hard-hitting stories that I should be pursuing.
Mm-hmm.
I have failed, clearly, in my job. And I
blame your editor. Your editor should be like, Adam, I need you to get to the bottom of this.
You still got a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Instead of, yes.
That's your off-season homework, Adam. Figure out the makeup habits of the whole roster.
So he will do next Monday. He'll do like a season in review. That would be a good time maybe to throw it in.
There you go.
I mean, the problem here is the guyliner.
There have been slanderous claims from the Autumn Windbags. Can you confirm
that? Guy Soto's a dick.
This is another problem, though, with like not being around. So like if Derek Carr was just in the locker room, you could just be like, bro, what's going on with the – and you could even look in the locker, see if you see any evidence of eyeliner somewhere in the locker.
Adam Hill sees eyeliner in Derek Carr's locker room.
But yes, but like, now that we have to do it on the Zoom, it's like now everybody's going to see you ask the question, and the fans are watching live too, which throws you off sometimes. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if I'm ready for that Twitter smoke, because I've taken so much of it already. I'm like ready for the off season to just kind of chill. But maybe I'll throw it out there. Depends. Maybe if they win.
You've already had a bunch, man. You might as well. Shit. Like,
oh, so much. So much.
Might as well. I look at your Twitter feed. I was like, God damn.
Oh. Well, and I have to deal with, I'm a former Bills obsessed fan.
Former? And, picked a weird time to stop.
No, I didn't. So it goes, there's a lot of factors here, but I, you know, Tyrod Taylor was like my favorite player ever. Like, I just loved that, everything about that guy and what he did. Taking the Bills to the playoffs for the first time in 20 years, and then sitting in that stadium as I'd go to games and just hear all of the racial epithets hurled at him, and you'd be like, dude, that guy is taking you to the playoffs. Like, what are you doing? Like, what are we doing here? And I just wasn't comfortable with, like, you know, the next year they bring in Josh Allen, who I said would never be good, so I'm looking brilliant on that one. But they bring him in, and, like, people said, oh, Tyrod Taylor runs too much. And then Josh Allen is the least accurate quarterback in the league. But they're like, yeah, but look how good he is as a runner. And I'm like, so because he's white, he's allowed to run? Like, this is how we're dealing with things now?
Again, and it's that, like, sliding scale. Like, he's fast for a white guy. There you go.
So I was like, I just can't do this. Like, I don't want to be a fan of a team anymore. And maybe, you know, maybe covering a team kind of soured me on fandom as well. But I was like, that just made me uncomfortable. Like, if you don't like the guy, fine. Like, you don't have to sit there and shout N-bombs at the guy because he doesn't stand up straight in the pocket and throw balls like you want him to. Like, that just doesn't make any sense to me.
So you started covering the Raiders, who have whose fans have a phenomenal reputation as very upstanding individuals.
Sure. Sure. But like, I look at it differently. Like, covering a team, I look at it as different than supporting a team. And by the way, I've like, is the reputation that Raiders fans have. And by the way, I did get beat up in the black hole when I was 22.
That was really
fun. Oh yeah.
It's a badge of honor, man.
That's awesome. Yeah. Tell us the story. Like, what were you wearing a Bills jersey? Is that why?
Yeah. So I was like, yeah, I said, I was a Bills fan. And I have a Raiders fan friend who has tickets in the black hole in Oakland, and would fly out from Vegas every weekend. And he's like, hey, I will give you my seat, you know, my extra seat, if you wear a Bills jersey and you're obnoxious.
Some friend. Yeah. He wanted to see me get your shit kicked in.
Yeah. And he said, and you're obnoxious. Like, be did a you fan
fuck
like you
his,
always are.
Did you fuck his girlfriend?
So, like, I kind of was under the impression, like, oh, you're a regular. So, like, I'm going to be sitting with you.
Nope.
So, like, it'll be okay. It's not going to be too crazy. So, he gets so drunk that he's like he's sleeping in the stands. It's fine.
Yep.
I went like to the bathroom
more and more.
Yeah, I went to the bathroom in the Coliseum, which is just an adventure. Yeah. And as I'm coming back, one of the guys from the black hole is like, "You're not coming back to your seat. Like, that's it. That's you're done. Like, go sit somewhere else." And I was like, "Wait, what?" And I told the security guy, "I was like, hey, my seat's down there, and this guy's not letting me go." And he goes, "Yeah, it's for the best. Don't sit there." Like, okay,
we can't protect you.
So, so I found a new place to sit back. You know, it wasn't a whole lot of people there. There was plenty of open seating in other sections. So I sat somewhere else. And after the game, the Raiders won. And I believe they lost the first four games of the year. They won this game to maybe go 1-4 or 2-4, whatever it was. And I'm getting so much shit on the way out, you know, wear the Bills jersey from the same people that I saw in the black hole, whatever. And they're just like screaming at me. And so I held up. I was like, "You're still 1-4. 1-4. He's holding it up. 1-4.
You were asking. And for then,
that. Yeah, for get sure.
Get me pissed off right now, man.
And then I felt somebody like running up behind me and just kicked me as hard as they could in the back of my leg. And I went down and then just got pummeled on the ground on that.
Holy shit.
The tunnel, the overpass that goes from the stadium to the park.
Yeah.
And it was so bad. Like, I was so disoriented. Oh, I got on the BART and I went the wrong way. I went into San Francisco instead of going out to my family's house in the East Bay where I was going to go stay. Jeez. Yeah, it was ugly, but I deserved it. Like, I wasn't like, I didn't get up and like, how could these people do this? I'm like, yeah, that's what I deserve. I was being obnoxious. I was drunk and being obnoxious. What are they supposed to do? So I don't hold it against them. And I've had really good interactions with Raiders fans since I've been covering the team in terms of, yeah, sometimes they take shots at you at Twitter or whatever, but like when you see them in person somewhere, not that we can see anybody anywhere anyway anymore. But you know, last year being up there, I lived in Oakland basically for the year. I've had nothing but good interactions with people.
That's I want to get beat up in the black hole. Like, that just feels like a badge of honor. You know what I mean?
Well, technically, I was gone from the black hole, but that's true. I started in the black hole. So
the black holeites are the ones that got them.
Yeah, black hole natives.
Yeah, they found me, and I deserved it.
His name's Adam Hill. You can check him out at the Las Vegas Review Journal. And if you want to harass him on Twitter, go to at Adam Hill LVRJ.
Give him all your smoke.
Thanks, Adam.
All the smoke. Yeah, you guys. Good talking to you.
All right. Thanks again, Adam Hill. That was fantastic. And now for my favorite segment, I guess our only segment, really.
We know you know all about Gruden's grinders.
Offensive linemen, defensive linemen, special teams players, backups.
But what do you know about Rory's grinders?
I think he's a great dude. I think he's got all the talent in the world.
You can't find me. I'll be the closest one on Grinder.
All right, Rory, who's your Rory's grinder this week?
Well, my Rory's grinder this week, since we played so fucking poorly last week, I'm going to give it to the fans that beat up Adam Hill at the black hole.
Yes! Yes!
It's nice to know the reputation stands up. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm sorry, Adam.
Yeah. I'm not. That's fucking amazing.
He said it himself. He deserved it. Like, that's a good football fan. You know what I mean? Like, you took your licking like a man. You knew you deserved it. And now you have a great story. You know what I mean? I'm just lucky it was just fists he got hit with. He didn't get stabbed.
Yeah, broke
a ball. Yeah, seriously.
Especially with like a white Bills jersey. You could see all the blood.
Mm. Dude, on the overpass to the BART as well. I mean, that's 100,000 fans. It feels like a lot of fans coming.
No one would have fucking helped them.
That is such a scary walk. That bridge from the BART to the stadium in Oakland. You guys have done that walk before,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah,
hell yeah.
Dude, it's like you're going to prison. It's just concrete, cement, crazy. And then like barbed wire. It's just this narrow walkway of just like Raider fans. And normally they're pissed off and drunk. It's like Dude. Death row.
And then the hot dog and like the beer vendors and shit. And it just takes one person to stop and get that shit. And then it's this crazy stampede of people just barreling over.
Smashing into you.
Yeah.
You know, I'll tell you something right now. That dude, Hill's buddy that passed out, he's lucky that he passed out, because Raider fans will beat up their own if they're even chumming with a fan from the other team. Yeah. So he fucking lucky he passed out.
So final game of the season coming up. We got the Broncos in Denver. Basically playing to be 8-8 versus 7-9. Not a whole lot riding on this game. I mean, what do you guys like? What are you rooting for? Like, what are you looking for in our last game of the season? Is it just like you're rooting for a win, or like what are our emotions this weekend?
I want creativity. I want some creativity here. I want different, getting your players different, getting them the ball different ways. I want different guys being more involved. I want Edwards a lot more involved in the offense. Every time he's gotten the ball, this guy's moving the ball. He's getting first downs. This guy sure has. He doesn't drop the ball. Reward the guy for blocking. Reward him for being a glorified offensive lineman out there. Okay. Get Ruggs the ball. Be more creative on how you get him the ball. Get the defensive guys, get them some run. Be a little bit more creative. Like I said, be more creative on both sides of the ball.
Help Mike Mayock do his job is what I'm looking for. I think this is where players and fans maybe differ. I guarantee you, John Gruden and the players are thinking about this game as finishing this season strong and finishing with a win, as opposed to, like, trust me, they're not thinking about next year unless you're a guy like Vic Beasley trying to put some stuff on tape. Like, I guarantee you that they're very much so thinking, we win out. This is about us and winning. It's about culture. It's about commitment to excellence, pride. So it wouldn't surprise me to see Jason Witten get 3 touchdowns on his last career game.
Jason Witten's going to break the record for most games played by a tight end. It'll be 271 games, breaking Tony Gonzalez's record. Although, it's almost worth Jason Witten taking that money, taking that cap space, taking Foster Moreau snaps, basically taking targets away from other players. It's almost worth it to be able to break a Chiefs record. I feel like, okay, I'll take this whole season from Jason Witten just to knock off one of Tony Gonzalez's record with a Raider.
Fuck the Chiefs.
It's a big day for tight ends in general. With 6 receptions, Darren Waller can break Tim Brown's record for most receptions by a player in the silver and black. Obviously, that's awesome for Darren Waller, like, clearly deserves it, but it also kind of goes to show you how we're not spreading the ball around when you're breaking Tim Brown's Mr. Raiders single season reception record by a tight end.
Yeah, that's tough.
Crazy impressive, man. Crazy impressive. There were some really good quotes this year about him being, you know, a Hall of Fame effort on and off the field. Mm-hmm. Like, you got to give mad respect, mad props to the dude. I really hope he gets the record.
Yeah, I think 6 is totally doable, right? What's he averaging? What is he averaging this year?
How many does he have?
I mean, it's either 13 or it's like 2. You know what I mean? Right? There's very little in between with Gruden.
He's got 98 receptions in 15 games. He hasn't missed any time. 100 on 135 targets. 1,079 yards, 8 touchdowns. His long is only 38. I feel like he's breaking. We're just not breaking big plays. Ever. Even when Waller's like can't even get like a 40 yarder.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. I mean, Waller's got the juice. It's not his, you know, lack of legs.
Yeah.
He's been put in the opportunities to make those big plays. It's everyone else that hasn't.
All right, boys. Anything else before we go? Anything interesting?
Fuck you, Rory.
Look, if Carr is starting, which it sounds like he is starting, I want to see Derek Carr from the first 10 games, not from the last 6 games. That's where I'm at. That's what I want to see.
Amen.
And if we don't, fuck me, it's going to be a long off season.
God damn. If Carr goes out there and just plays a regular Carr game, fuck, it's like, why? It's a wasted game.
It really is.
Find out anything new. You find anything new about your play. I just have it in my head. We're going to go in there and Gruden's going to want to win this game because I want to win. We're a winner. We have that. We want to win every game. But it's like, you don't know about any of your young guys. Yeah, you see them in practice, but you don't see them in the game.
And it's not like starting Mariota's throwing the white flag. Like, he played great in the three quarters that he played this season, you know?
Oh, man. I'm just real nervous. That's what we're going to see. We're going to see the same team that's gone 1-5 in the last six. You know, dude, the freaking Broncos have gone 2-4 in the last six, and we've gone 1-5. We're worse than the Broncos the last six games. That's bad.
Yeah. At least I'd like to sweep one team in the division. You know what I mean? 1-1 against the Chiefs, 1-1 against the Chargers. We got the first one against the Broncos. That was probably our best performance against the Broncos. Definitely our defense's best performance. It'd be nice to get sweep somebody in the AFC West. That'd be nice.
This is kind of a Rod Marinelli Bowl. Like, that is the subtext of this game. This is actually a really important game for our defensive coordinator position. I mean, I think – what do you guys think in terms of the defensive performance? If you take away the last play of the game, we were all chirping about the defense, saying how improved they look and how much – you know, we saw some significant signs of improvement there. So, if we see a similar type of game as we saw the last 2 weeks with Rod Marinelli, are we keeping him based on that? What are you guys looking for on that side?
I don't want Marinelli back. We got to do better. We got to do better.
I think he's just kind of a guy that he brought Marinelli in because he was kind of looking ahead. Hey, you know what? If this defense is as bad as it was last year, I'm going to give Gunther a chance. But, you know, if I have to cut him, I know Marinelli has the chops to be able to come in late or mid-season and handle the rest of the way. But I don't think he's really looked at serious. I don't think he is, at least, looked at someone who's going to be seriously looked at to be the DC going forward.
I'm calling it right now. If we're anything but embarrassing on defense this game, Rod Marinelli's the defensive coordinator next year. Because, again, this is fucking Gruden we're talking about here.
I hope you're wrong.
It is fucking Gruden we're talking about.
If Raheem Morris is available, I think Gruden makes that move.
I mean, again, like, yeah, why did he bring in Marinelli? Why did he bring in Marinelli? It's because there was a probability that he would have to step in at some point. You wanted a guy that has the chops to be a defensive coordinator. Can you imagine that conversation that Gruden's going to have with Marinelli if the defense improves again this game? Hey, Rod, we brought you in for this exact reason. You actually improved the defense with the exact same supporting cast in only three games, one of them on a short week against a pretty tough opponent. Sorry, but we're actually going to go a different direction.
Yes.
Like, That's exactly the conversation.
Yeah.
I would love that to be the case. I don't see that with Gruden. So that's my hot take.
All right.
I think if it's a good game from the defense, more improvement, let's say three sacks, a pick, anything but complete.
Whoa. That's crazy, Rory. Whoa. Our defense?
Easy, bro.
Hold on. What is this, fantasy land? Three sacks and a turnover? What world are you living in?
Big tits around ass, and she can cook. Listen, bro. Listen.
This is a fantasy. It doesn't exist in nature. All right, boys. We will be back after the game this weekend for the final game of the 2020 season. Till then, knock on wood if you're with me. Thank you for listening to the Autumn Windbags. If you liked what you heard, make sure to comment, rate, subscribe, find us on social media, all the good stuff. Till next time.